Our councillor Lisa Thompson's here in the studio already, bright and early.
Bright and early, that's right. I was so looking forward to our corridor that I bounded out of the house. So I'm well above schedule, which I'm very grateful for, actually. Kia ora, Aaron. Kia ora, everyone.
So we had a... let's talk about what we were just talking about off the air, because a few weeks ago there was a discharge of treated water on the incoming tide. Important to say it was treated, but it caused a little bit of... just don't go in the water for a couple of days in the harbour on a weekend. And I had tried to follow that up with staff to find out about the issue of whether our houses are still putting stormwater into the sewer system. And they've had, it looks like they've had a series of smoke tests, like 2017 they did a part of, we'll call it Raglan East, sort of around, centred around Government Road. And they've done it before, and people have anecdotally said, yeah, that we had a letter and we had to, and they came and followed up to make sure we'd done the job. So I was trying to find out from staff, but haven't yet been able to find out if our houses are the problem or if it's something else. I sort of get the feeling with the slowness of the response that the current staff may not really know what the specific cause is.
And you also were liaising with our comms team as opposed to directly with the water staff.
I thought I wasn't allowed to talk to anyone else except going through comms.
Probably.
They did send it through to someone. I don't know who.
Yeah, so what I'll need to do is I'll follow up on that because, apologies, I didn't actually read your email until quite late last night.
I only got it last night.
Yeah, so I'll follow up on that detail. But my understanding is, it's a combination of all of the rain, those weather events that we've had, stormwater, that actually led to the treated wastewater discharge on the incoming tide, which is really incredibly unfortunate. The impact that it has on our community, and particularly, the kohanga reo at the Kōkiri, and all of the other activities that take place down there. And, that space is very important for hapu and for...
Because that's where it goes out, is in that area, is it?
It's in that area where they're actually just to the harbour mouth side of the toilets that are at Wainamu. That's where the outflow pipe is. So, of course, it's of serious concern to people who are using the Kōkiri and the babies at the Kohanga. And so, it is. It's concerning.
Yeah. So it was just to find, I guess I was just curious to see if, well, we want to know what the actual cause is, really.
Yeah, and I'll follow up. My understanding was it was a combination of the inundation of the water, but also the stormwater, and how full the ponds were as well. So, but I will get back to you with that information, Aaron.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, probably the next time we talk to you will be next year. But
I know, amazing, isn't it?
I could do with a break, though. It's good.
Yeah,
it's been a busy year.
Yeah, it has been a busy year, hasn't it? What have you been your highlights and your lowlights, Aaron? When you've been on the radio, what have been the real topics of discussion?
Well, the interesting thing, I do a thing with John Lawson at the end of each year where we go through the news stories of the year.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a gallop to try to get through them. But the actual thing that stuck out from that was how different this end of the year was to the start of the year. At the start of the year, it was all about COVID and restrictions and things like that. And it feels like years ago now.
I know, it's actually
just
hard.
It's changed so much since then.
And it's actually a little bit of a blur. If I look back to, 2020, when we were, our first lockdown and I was up at school and we were giving out the devices and it was a civil defence emergency, state of emergency, and our staff, delivering the packs for students who couldn't come in to pick up their gear, all of that sort of stuff, to now it's a blur, actually. When you think about everything that's taken place through that time, I realise, we're really under stress, and then to come back to some form of what normal is, and then you think, what the heck is normal?
And I've certainly picked that up, that people are stressed. One of my regular guests, we talked about, she suggested people are grieving. And not necessarily for a lost person or a loved one or anything like that. Maybe lost dreams, lost jobs, or lost friends, or all sorts of possibilities just from the 2 year COVID period. And maybe that's the now that all the restrictions are over, now we're free to feel the stress perhaps, I mean, I'm not an expert on this, but I certainly see signs everywhere talking to everyone that, that people are more stressed.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping this break, this summer break, might be good for some of us.
Yeah, and I think there are other things that, you know, are contributing to that, Aaron, eh? That's the cost of living, you know, the interest rates.
Oh, the housing situation.
All of those things, yeah. You know, and the housing situation and cost of living isn't something that's happened overnight. It's a pressure that people have felt for longer than the time of the pandemic.
It's like that boiling frog thing, yeah. That metaphor.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's a whole combination of reasons of why I think that people feel burdened by that. But I've also seen over the last 2 years is some fabulous examples of collaboration and unity. Mm. You know, people working together and across, you know, our amazing community of volunteers, of, you know, of paid people working in different organisations that have really rallied together to support our community. And, you know, if you look at Mike Edmonds and the whole Water Hub at the Kōkiri, the fantastic work that they're doing, the collaboration with Raglan Naturally, our community wellbeing connector, Lara Sweetman, Gabriel Parson, and then, you know, with them working alongside the medical centre, providing services, you know, every fortnight to whānau out at Waingaro, all of those sorts of things, they're really heartening, you know, that we've actually been able to collaborate in across different organisations rather than working in silos. And I think just opening up our ability to work together, which has been fantastic. Yeah. And, you know, things like celebrating the 25 years of the Community Patrol. You know, and the work that they've been doing over those 25 years to keep our communities safe. So there's lots of great stuff that's happening as well.
And I think that's the story of COVID in this community was everyone, like, there was no preparation for that, and the government wasn't prepared. No government appeared to be prepared for something like that. I mean, I was involved in it and you were involved in it. Just the people who were able to do things in the community got together very quickly and started working together. And I know that's made a huge difference in the community rather than like waiting for someone to come in on a white horse from government to help us, because that clearly wasn't going to be happening.
Yeah, and I think I mean,
the government was doing stuff, but we had to do stuff locally to
that power of community is incredible. Yeah. And I think that's happened across Aotearoa, actually. You know, some of my fellow councillors, Candy Ngātaki from Tuakau, she, along with Grace, who's on the community board. So Candy Ngātaki is a councillor for the Tuakau ward.
New councillor.
Yep. And then Grace, she's actually an elected member of the North, one of the community boards up there. And, you know, they, when they first went into lockdown, they really responded to their communities, Pacifica and Māori, and have kept that up. So just amazing pockets of response and resilience from different communities, which is pretty awesome, actually, when you look at that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that's a story that has been repeated throughout the country and in every little community.
Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine it has. Yeah. And I pity the ones that where it didn't happen as well. Yeah,
and we're very strong in terms of our ability to collaborate and also access people power and resources. Excuse me.
So let's move on to some other things. It wasn't discussed at the community board meeting, but I was wondering about whether the internal bus...
Oh, and I forgot to bring that up, the internal bus. So I don't know if you know, but Andrew Wilson, who... Was it Andrew? You know, the guy from Regional Council?
I don't remember.
I think I'm pretty sure it was Andrew Wilson. He's actually left.
That guy from Regional Council.
Yeah, from Regional Council. So he's left, and there's a new person that's taken over from his role, Wendy. So we've managed to have a hui about our bus services. So we're looking at March 2023.
Okay.
And so I gave her all of the information that we'd gathered through our surveys that we've had out.
Yep.
And school's going to put out a survey at the beginning of next year, actually. So the anticipated bus service will happen.
So people can still comment on the survey. I know it's technically it's still available on the community board website.
Yeah, I need to take it off because all of the information
has gone
through. Okay. Right. And it gave us a really good basis that there is an appetite for some sort of regular shuttle service to happen, to go out to, you know, the wharf, into the CBD, and out to the beaches and so on. You know, for various reasons, people, for socials, for shopping, medical appointments, catching the bus to go to Hamilton. And then there was also a small appetite to have a bus that would go directly to the base as well, a service rather than going into the transport centre and then going out to there. So that was quite good feedback. And then there was a lot of feedback around having a support for Raglan West and Raglan East around a smaller bus service for the school, which would be great, obviously, to combat hopefully some of that congestion that we see particularly at school on after school. Actually, it's the pick up. It's only for like 20 minutes. Really, the biggest bottleneck is about 25 minutes up at school. After school is the worst.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned to you that the police were up there.
Oh, I knew they were because one of them asked me to move on a few months ago.
Yeah. And
you can't stop there, sir.
Yeah, and then so they were there and they thought that it was one of the worst congested schools in the district. So that's
it's an unfortunate situation. It's a dead end and there's no actual parking on any of the streets around or not.
And everyone
much.
Comes at the same time. And one of the comments that the police listed as a problem was entitled argumentative parents.
Well, I wasn't there. I just did what I was told. I'm not on that list.
But we had, I mentioned earlier that we had a board of trustees last Friday. And one of our focuses for next year will be around that very issue of the congestion, and because we had and looking at what some of the solutions can be and what would that look like. So that's awesome that the board want to take that up, because as you know, I've sort of tried to champion that, but you only have so many hours in the day, you need a group of really passionate people to progress projects of that nature.
Some new energetic board members.
Yeah, which is fantastic. Yeah. And so we'll in the new year, there'll be the information about the board going out, who the chairs are, all of that in profiles of the board. So then the community will have a good idea who's who and who is on each committee. But without giving too much away, I'm no longer the board chair, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to just being a board member and supporting the school.
And I think really long term for the school, the Ministry of Education needs to be buying some farmland now to build. I mean, if we've got a population of 12,000 in 50 years' time, there's going to have to be another school
there
somewhere.
There is going to have to be another school.
Yeah.
And, that's why we capped our numbers to 1,000.
Yep.
And that's realistic for the space that we have as well.
Yeah.
But there's some exciting things that are happening at school, and looking forward to the new year. But anyway, we're not here to talk about the
right,
school.
Right, no, there's just a little drop by the school there. But things that were talked about at the community board meeting, before I get my list, what do you remember as specific?
The funding applications. I think the board meeting went really great. There were the funding applications where we supported the Raglan Gym, the fireworks display, and of course the New Year's Parade, which is so exciting to have that back. In the public forum, there were questions around when would the one-lane car bridge be two-laned. And I spoke to our staff and they said, look, it will be imminent that the trigger for the traffic will be triggered, basically. So we need the numbers, and that's what Alison had said.
So we should just go and drive over the bridge more often.
Yeah, so, that will trigger that works to happen. And, of course, it had been deferred from 2026 to 2031 in the long-term plan and the last deliberations. But I'm quietly confident that, that will happen before then, quite simply because of the growth in the community and the use of that bridge.
And it's the old story, if the community decides it's something they really want and starts to make a bit of noise about it, I think that constructive noise, right? I think that would...
Because we have to take it to council, and it has to be a decision of council about where the funds come from.
And that's several million dollars, no doubt.
Yeah, I have no idea how much that would be. I think I'd heard about $12 million, but I don't know.
I reckon it'd be more now.
Yeah, I
whatever
agree.
Number you name at the moment, whatever number you give, it's, yeah. You know it's going to be more.
Yeah, and it'll be from those developer contributions. So that came up. The lights down at the recreation centre that are on 24/7, that came up as well.
Oh, I just want to mention that you mentioned the gym getting some money. That was so they could run a youth program.
Not only run a youth program, but also upgrade the equipment that currently exists in the...
To benefit that. And that's the gym under the town hall, not the commercial gym over the road too.
Yep, and then they're looking to expand their outreach to young people within our community as well.
Yeah, and I was aware of that program that they were talking about. Mike from the Community House has been talking about it. He's got Jade who does the kickboxing, and I've seen him walking around with some young guys doing, you know, just doing the job. So,
and it's great to see him doing that work, particularly because the kids he's working with are the kids that really need our support as a community, you know. So he's doing a great job.
Yeah. Okay, so lots of people talking about the bridge. The
Sound Splash.
I was going to say, should we talk about that first?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, and then we'll go back to Lorenzen Bay. So that, you guys were just asking some questions. The board was asking some questions and the...
Well, about... has it been given the resource consent to finally go ahead?
And staff were there to answer questions.
Yeah, and that, you know, for the licensing and so on, they've got until the 20th of this month to put that in. And so, yeah, there's a whole list of things, but it appears to be on track.
Yeah, it sounds complicated, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is, because you've got alcohol licensing, then you've got, you know, the sign-off when the structures are actually put on site and built, all of
that. Yeah, it's an actual building consent.
Yeah, so you can't actually do that until you inspect that the structures themselves. It is complicated, and it's not a small event, so, you know, it's a tricky one. So it was great to have Sam there to actually speak to what's happening. And, of course, there was questions around whether they would be using the airfield and... you know, I think it's the best place for the overflow car parking and the ticketing to be. And part of that resource consenting is that the ticketing process is sped up and becomes more efficient, because that's where a lot of the bottlenecks were at the last event.
Took a couple of hours for some people. It's standing around in the sun was what I heard. So
it took, I believe, up to 3 or 4 hours.
Oh, okay,
so it was a long wait.
So they're doing something also about if they have to wait around in the sun, there's going to be some care.
They're actually going to have a welfare station down based at the airfield, which is a great idea. Leanne from the camp had wanted that in the last one, because, of course, at the camping ground they have a lot of attendees of the event staying on site. And then, so they're putting in measures onto the airfield to support what happens down there, because it is a satellite site. And, you know, we parked a good 1,500 vehicles on the airfield. And then, of course, we had the parents or caregivers dropping people off in order for them to get their ticketing done. So it's a really busy spot, but I think it's a key spot just to alleviate the traffic congestion and the impact to our community, not only on Wainui Road and in town, but also up at the reserve.
And I understand that that's the best spot to do it. Everywhere else, they end up with queues on the road.
That's exactly right, and we saw it in previous years that was the case.
Yeah.
And, you know, the last couple of years that we've used the airfield has really cut that time down on the road and having the bus service from the airfield.
A couple of other things I picked up from that discussion was to do with extra lifeguards during Sound Splash, just down on the beach.
Well, they, as Dennis pointed out, I think it was Ross actually that pointed out how many people actually they use the beach at that time, because there's festival goers as well as just normal beach goers as well.
And it's, you know, Sound on a fine Splash day for a reason. Yeah.
And, you know, on a fine weekend, Ngaranui over Christmas, New Year's is really busy at that time of year anyway. So, you know, the lifeguards, the surf life saving, do a fantastic job. keeping everyone safe. But I can imagine that they need a lot of extra resources over that time to meet the needs.
If you've got one of those nasty days where the water's moving sideways and all that, you'd be in a lot of trouble with a big crowd. The other thing too was about overflow parking there. It wasn't available last year. They want to make sure it's available. Is that for people who don't go to Soundsplash?
And who are using the beach.
Using the beach, okay.
Yeah, because as Dennis rightly pointed out, that there's cars parked everywhere that, you know, emergency services can't actually get down to the surf life-saving if it's needed, you know, if it's the fire service, if it's the ambulance. So that needs to be a priority to be able to have the just normal beachgoers to continue their easy access to accessing Ngarenui.
And if people are wondering, like last time I dropped someone off there, I noticed that there's actually a big structure built so that the sound splashers can walk up and over the road. It actually looks quite cool. You go in, it's like this big structure. You're like, oh, yeah, I feel like I've arrived somewhere.
It's pretty clever, eh?
Yeah, yeah. The down at Lorenzen Bay, there still seems to be an issue about whether they're going to get to keep their walkway down there.
You mean Cambrai Road?
The walkway that pops up onto Cambrai Road.
Dennis and I are actually going to meet on site today so that we can have a look at what, because I know where that walkway is, but then we at council anticipate using another track that had been proposed, but apparently it's steep. So I can't comment any more on that, because I don't know where that proposed area is. So Dennis and I are meeting down there at 3:30 today to go and have a walkover.
And there was talk about Freedom Campers. I guess we don't know how many we're going to get this year, but I imagine it'll be back to pre-COVID levels.
I have no idea.
That's
but
a guess.
It's great,
yeah.
You know, but it's great that we've got some extra funding from. I don't know where we got that funding from.
The council staff member just said they had extra funding for.
Where did we get it for? Was it ministry for?
It sounded like it was outside council.
It's definitely outside of council, so it must be.
What's it for? Is the main thing.
Yeah, it's for the Freedom Camping Ambassador.
Yep.
To be available like we have had in the past, which has worked really well. So we'll just have to watch this space, won't we, Aaron, around how many people will come in terms of Freedom Camping. And, you know, I'd ask Mike Bennyworth if information could be distributed to the iHub as well.
Because he's the council staff member we're talking
our
to.
Council, yeah. You'd see him going around. He's one of our monitoring staff. You'd know him. He lives in Raglan.
Yep.
And so it's great that we've got more resourcing for that in anticipation for a busy summer, because I think we are going to be in for a really busy summer. And I know that from talking with our iHub volunteers, they've noticed an increase in visitors.
Right.
And an increase in international visitors. So that's really neat. I don't know in what numbers, because I actually haven't been down at the iHub much of late since we've gone back into council. But it's good to know that we've got a lot of visitors. And then, of course, we had our business chamber end of the year this week, and Lisa James from Orca was talking about, you know, their staff challenges. They're really
everywhere you go, you see signed staff wanted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think the message out to our community and our visitors should be just chill out and relax. You know, that our local businesses are under the pump. And that we need to be mindful that we might want quick turnarounds with takeaways and things like that, but we may not get that. So really mindful of those resources. You know, some places can't operate in the morning, they'll be operating at night and vice versa. So it's just a time to be really mindful of that and respectful to the businesses as they, you know, manage through these really difficult times.
Usually backpackers make up some of the staff. I have this theory that they've all been saving up their money for 2 years and now they're here and they haven't finished spending it yet, so none of the backpackers need any work.
Yeah, I don't know.
This is just a guess, but hopefully in a few months they will have spent their cash and then they'll need some work.
Yeah, or maybe they're just they've just come into New Zealand and they're doing the travelling around stuff, you know. Just be mindful of that lack of resourcing within our businesses, particularly over the coming weeks and months, because also people are getting sick.
And everyone's more careful about staying home when they're sick.
That's another important factor to think about as well.
Yeah, so and back to the freedom camping, people should know that the rules are that according to the government legislation, council has to say and the community has to say, here's the areas you can't camp, but you can camp anywhere else that you like.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and so we've got certain areas designated that you can't freedom camp at the moment.
And so anywhere that looks has a view out onto the water, i.e. Cliff Street, Papahua, Manu Bay, Ngarenui, are all no-go zones for freedom camping. And then the CBD here in town is a no-go for freedom camping on Bow Street and some of Wainui Road, Bankart Street and Stewart Street are no-goes, but anywhere else you can actually freedom camp for up to 3 days.
But that is going to be reviewed, isn't it? People can have their say at the moment.
The pre-engagement has already is already happening.
What does pre-engagement mean?
Well, it's getting an idea of what the appetite out in the community is, whether or not, you know, should we extend the areas for the freedom camping ban where they can't freedom camp. You know, so it's just getting an idea so then staff can work on a proper consultation document based on what they've already, what feedback they've already had. And
then they'll draft the new bylaw.
Consultation document around that.
Okay, all right.
And then that will go out to the community, and that will inform. Yeah,
but the community can now make comments if they go to the council website.
And it's a very simple, and you know, people have to be aware as well. We can't ban it completely.
Yeah.
You know, what we have done is taken the freedom camping away from where the toilets are and things like that, which has in itself caused problems.
Because the toilets are all around the areas where the views are as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is the way it works.
So that's out. So let's wait and see and watch the space. I haven't seen a huge influx of freedom campers. I don't know if you have.
No, not really, but I haven't been looking.
But I haven't seen any complaints on the notice board either.
No, that's right. You find out. That's one way you find out. Well, I guess we'll see what happens after Christmas, New Year's. I reckon that's more likely to be the time, but we'll find out. And the other thing that the council staff member said was that the government legislation's been reviewed.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, you know, we've got our Freedom Camping Bylaw review, which is happening. But, you know, what... We have no idea what the appetite in government is for the review of the freedom camping law.
Okay. I'm just going through my notes from the community board meeting. Let me see anything we haven't talked about recently. Not particularly. They're still going ahead with the swimming pool at Rangatahi, but that's kind of independent from
the
council.
That's independent from council.
They're just letting you know that they're still working on it.
Yep. That's exactly right. So it was not a very big agenda, was it? But there was good discussion had, and I'd give a plug for the Community Safety Day as well.
Yeah, we want to talk about that. So that's tomorrow.
Yeah, that's tomorrow, which is great. So we hope to have heaps of people from the community coming down to engage with the police. Also, we've got our animal control team, so we'll have police dogs and our animal control team with some of the dogs and giving out information. If you're keen to volunteer or put your hand up or want to know some more information about the community patrol, Kevin Holmes and others will be down there, you know, talking about what they do and about, you know, if you wanted to volunteer. So too with neighbourhood support. Chris from the Waikato Neighbourhood Support will be there.
Yep.
And, of course, the Marae under the... Under Val Rippey will be there doing the sausage sizzle for the community.
Oh, yes.
And I'll be there. So too will be Lara Sweetman, who's our community wellbeing connector for Raglan Naturally. and Prime Medical and our local ambulance service will be there as well.
What will people go along to see aside from check out the dogs? But there's a picture of a police car on the poster.
Yeah, the police cars will be there.
You can show the kids inside the car.
Inside the cars you can go into the ambulance, you can go and look at Prime Medical's vehicle, ask them questions. So, and then you can talk to our animal control crew who are really passionate, so they can give you information about where you can walk your dogs, all of that sort of stuff. So I think it'll be a great day tomorrow, just an opportunity to engage directly with the police around what they have planned for the Christmas New Year period. And as you know, Aaron, normally at the community board level we'd usually invite those services, including extreme waste, which we haven't done this year, around what we have anticipated for the busy period.
Yeah. So people, usually there's extra police come out.
There is. And, you know, we're going to ask questions and ask feedback from the community. What do you love about Raglan? What are the things that make you feel safe? What solutions do you have to some of the things that you've seen, you know, whatever comes out of that discussion? And, you know, we'll compile that information because we have been working with the police, and that's more with the area commander, actually, Will, about finding solutions. But, you know, good news about the Better Off funding.
We've talked about, we know that there's funding for the work down at the wharf, but also approved for Raglan. What else was
a project for a waka ama. There's also funding for the bowling club and the elevator at the
school. The old school, yeah, which they have to have.
Yep.
Yeah.
The wharf project, which was the biggest winner of all of the projects across the district, actually. So 19 projects were submitted for shortlisting to the Department of Internal Affairs. Of those 19, 5 were Raglan projects, and the other one is actually the AMPR and CCTV cameras for a number of communities across the district, which includes Raglan, which is fantastic. Right. Which
people have been asking for these for a while.
But, of course, that won't happen until the new year. But for our community to know that the AMPR, which are the recognition cameras, and more CCTVs.
Number plate recognition.
Yeah. And the CCTVs cameras as well. So that's a great win for our community.
Yeah, so, folks, if your car gets stolen, report it right away, because the camera will probably be somewhere on State Highway 23. If you report it right away, then the system will pick it up.
Yeah, but their system's not in yet.
Not yet. Well, get in the habit.
Yeah,
right?
Get in the habit of it. And so that's fantastic news to go into the new year with. But I don't know what the timeframes are, Aaron.
Oh, no, well, if they've just got the money, then they've got to do the...
Yeah, and there's a whole contractual process as well.
It'll take a while, and it's Christmas, so it won't be happening until...
So it's fantastic.
Won't be starting until February. Just to start the process. What about over the hill at Narawahia? You're the chair of the...
Sustainability and
Wellbeing Committee, yep.
That's really exciting.
Have you got underway, or are you just kind of... Is everyone still... feeling their way into it?
The first tui for all of our committees will be in February.
Okay.
The Sustainability and Wellbeing Committee will probably be the second committee of council that meets in the second week of each month.
Yeah.
And so I'm really excited about that. I met with staff earlier on this week about the terms of reference, because they are quite loose. And
have we mentioned that you're the chair just now?
Oh, yeah, I'm the chair.
You're the chair. That's why we're talking about the specific committee, folks.
Yeah, so it's exciting, because over the next 3 to 6 months, we'll probably see a bit of tweaking and development of what that committee looks like, because it's completely new. And it's got a long list of outcomes on it. And so we really have to think about, what does sustainability look like for us as an organisation across everything that we do, and what's wellbeing? What does wellbeing look like, and how do we benchmark those sustainability and wellbeing when it comes to economic development, when it comes to community engagement, when it comes to infrastructure? So we really need to think about those things. So I'm really excited about that committee, and I think it's all of the front-facing people stuff, including funding as well, climate, blueprinting, community engagement, economic development. That's a tricky one, because what does sustainable economic development look like?
There was a question someone asked in the audience that relates kind of that to, for me anyway. Someone was asking, why don't we use wheelie bins in town? And because I've made this documentary about Extreme a few years ago, I answered the question.
I know that, and that was great, because it encourages more waste to be put into a wheelie bin. You don't see it, so you're not engaging with it. And the purpose of having the curbside recycling and food waste is so we take responsibility. And it is a luxury tax to put rubbish into a landfill. So that's why you pay for your blue bag. So it encourages people to think about what our consumption is and how we can take responsibility for that as well. And the other point that was made too is that we could go to an automated system where you have one truck and one driver going around picking up wheelie bins and dumping everything into landfill. And you know you get rid of all of that other stuff, and the benefits of a social enterprise of extreme zero waste is that we've got a pathway for people within our community, particularly young people, to work through getting, you know, starting off picking up the recycling or the rubbish, to getting their truck licenses, to getting their forklift tickets and things like that. So it's more than the sum of its parts to just simply say our rubbish out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah,
you know.
And they do have a bin that's the recycling, but the recycling gets all mashed together and it's sent off to this factory that processes it, and it doesn't process it as well as human beings process it. Like, they're not as smart as people. But the thing I wanted to tie into the economic well-being is the thing I've worked out in my film. I did a thing like, okay, if the community's spending this much in rates, what's the community's return on the rates? And if it's a community organisation like Extreme, then they spend more money into the community than they take in rates, whereas a commercial organisation is just sucking money out of the community, and it would spend a lot less into the community than it takes from the rates. So if you look at it from an economic investment perspective, Extreme is a winner. They spend about three times as much money into the community, by my calculations, that than waste management would, and that's even if waste management could do it for 5% cheaper, the economic impact of employing them would be huge because they would just suck money out of the community.
Yeah, and I think
that for economic well-being is hugely important. Like, that's your procurement policies.
And waste is a cost.
And there's all that as well.
Yeah, waste is a cost. It's not something that we just out of sight, out of mind. It comes with a responsibility, you know. Mm. And for me, it's not just about me. It's that intergenerational aspect of being responsible for our actions, and that's really important. And you know, we're getting away from that linear model of waste, you know, to that circular economy where we're putting back in. And it's exactly like you said, it's what Extreme or that model does. It puts back into the community in so many ways, you know, that meet the social, economic,
Environmental
aspects of the well-beings, you know. So it's important. And for us to understand that, yes, our rates are high. There's no shadow of a doubt that, you know, that our rating system is high. But, you know, when we're looking at aspects of our waste minimisation, you know, that's a huge burden and something that we have to take responsibility for as a species.
One thing I would say is that because they're a non-profit organisation, they recycle more things. You're able to recycle more stuff up there than you are at the commercial organisations over the hill. And because of that, you're paying less to dump waste. And the government is going to keep ratcheting up the waste levies as well. Landfill is going to become more and more expensive, which will make Extreme a cheaper and cheaper option compared to the commercial organisations.
And we've got actually a real bespoke service in Raglan. You know, we've got so many options that are provided for, because Extreme provide the contractual, some of it for council. You know, there's the curbside recycling and the food waste collection. But then there are all of the other options, like now with the new compost, you know, the new garden waste bins that you can get. And then, as Chris Rayner pointed out, you can actually get wheelie bins for waste.
Off of the businesses.
Businesses. And so we've got lots of options that we can actually buy into or not. And then just the standard curbside collections that we have.
So back to, we started off talking about the Sustainability and Wellbeing Committee. For people listening, there are four committees at council, which are quite, every councillor is on it. The committees is where a lot of work happens. There's like there's infrastructure,
policy
and regulatory, and
strategy, finance. They've changed names now.
Yeah, that's right. The mayor said when I interviewed her, but I can't remember what she
said. Yeah, I can't remember them either. But
I just wanted to give that context that these are where a lot of the work happens for the councillors.
It is. And for the council.
I like what the mayor said when she said, I wanted to make this, because these issues have been covered before, but she said she wanted to make this a full committee and make you the chair and give these issues the mana that they deserve in council.
And also she knows that I'm passionate about that.
Yeah, which is why she wanted you to do it. Yeah,
and I said to her that I would put in 150% into making it successful, that we have outcomes that we can actually demonstrate the benefit of what we're doing directly to our communities across our district. So that's really exciting. And, you know, we're so fortunate in council that we've got someone like Rachel Goddard as well,
who's a local person, who's the sustainability person.
Expert. Yeah. So that's
she's
fantastic.
She's been very complimentary of the council about that. She said to whoever was hiring her, if I can't actually make a difference, if I can't do stuff, I don't want this job.
Yeah.
But she's been given a pretty free rein to do the things she needs to do. Yeah. So that's so quite reassuring.
And I'm looking forward to working with her on this committee as well, so it's really great. And then of course we've got our subcommittees like our audit and risk, which actually is meeting for the first time this morning, so I hope that goes well.
And this is the one that makes sure the council doesn't get in financial difficulties.
They're looking at the financial difficulties, but also, you know, looking at our reputational damage, all of those sorts of things. So it's great that we've got an audit and risk committee.
It's probably not very exciting or newsworthy.
Comes down to, actually.
If they're in the news, it's usually for a bad reason.
So it's a very important subcommittee. And, of course, we attended our Te Maruata Hui as well. You interviewed me since
No,
then?
I don't know about that.
So all five Māori elected members went down to Wellington.
I saw on Facebook you put a picture about that.
Yeah, and that was fantastic. So that was awesome. So there's a yearly hui for those who are elected Māori members to local government. So that was the inaugural one for this term. And there were 70-plus delegates from across the country of 120 that have been elected across full territorial authorities and, regional councils and so on. So that was fantastic. And Councillor Tilly Turner and I actually went down a bit earlier on the Monday, and we did a number of things, including a tour of Parliament.
Okay.
And Tilly had said that she'd been down to Parliament quite a number of times. And what was pretty neat about this tour actually is that we had a Labour List MP join the tour because she had two young people with her. So she was able to talk about what happens in chambers when we were standing in the chambers.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. But as we were going through the tour, a couple of times, actually three times, we stop and we look at a certain area and are having a discussion, and a door opens and there's a person there that looks at us and, like, gets a fright and then looks at Tilly.
Because there's a crowd outside.
Yeah, there's a crowd outside, and then looks at Tilly and says, "Kia ora, auntie." That happened three times.
Oh, really?
At three different occasions. So that was pretty cool, actually.
So Tilly is our local for the
Tairunga Takiwa Māori Ward the
Southern
Councillor.
Ward. Well, do you know what I learned?
Actually, it's not the Southern Ward, it's the head of the fish.
I know, because I looked this up on Google. I did a Google thing, and it was the Google said the translation was upper, and I remembered that
the
Māori worldview is the world's up the other way on a map. If you did a Māori map.
Yeah, and that's the head of the fish as well. So, so she's fantastic. So we went down and we did that. We went and went to the National Library and saw the original treaty document and the suffragettes petition as well. So we did quite a lot of educational stuff whilst we were down there. So it was a neat hui.
All right, and that was just to explain the basis of the main reason for the hui again?
Is really for Māori elected members to be able to get together and coordinate what the key issues are for Māori and how we can best serve our communities in their entirety for everyone.
Right.
So, and what was interesting, the corridor that we had on that day were very much the wider corridor that all councils are having around affordability, the reforms, the local government, the future for local government draft, what does that look like? So it was all of the issues that were concerning everyone, regardless of if you're Māori or not.
And I was talking to Pamela Story, the regional council chairperson, at the start of the week, and she's pointing out there's not only three waters, but
there's the RMA.
And the local government reforms, but also the resource management reforms. So the whole local body landscape could be completely different in a couple of years.
Yeah. I don't know if you've read the Future for Local Government report.
I had a quick squiz at it. It's quite long.
It is at 240-plus pages.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing stopping local government from enacting a number of those recommendations, you know, and that this is a draft report. It's not saying thou shalt do this or thou shalt do that.
No, they've been really clear about that. They're saying this is with some ideas. What do people think we want to hear?
What do people think? What do people think from the community boards? What do councillors think? What do Māori think? What do individuals think across communities? So if you've got an appetite to read through that, I really encourage you to go onto the Future of Local Government website, and they've got an executive summary, and then they've got the full document, and then they've got other information. So I think it's a great opportunity, and of course, hand in hand with that, we've been having Zoom Hui this week about the Future for Local Government, and you know what's come out. You know, is there an appetite to lower the voting age to 16?
Interesting question.
And if that happens, you know, obviously it will be really important for education, so civics around that. And I'm all for lowering the voting age, personally.
I think it has a real advantage in that the people, young ones who can vote, will be at school. The school will be able to guide them through it and get them in the habit of voting early.
Yeah, and you know, the years 7 to 10, they're so engaged, you know, around, if I just look at what Joseph Rao was doing at school around, you know, social sciences. And, you know, those kids are passionate about things like Maui dolphins. They're passionate about equity and poverty. They're passionate about the homeless. They're passionate about the environment. You know, so addressing those things, mental health, all of those sorts of things. So they're really engaged at that time, so it's a perfect opportunity to feed the hearts and minds of young people about how you can actually make a difference through local government and central government by knowing what's happening. And oh my goodness, one thing I have to say about the hui that we went to in Wellington for Te Maruata, some of those young people who actually spoke, because we have elections as well within that Rōpū, in that group across the country. So we have a rural and provincial representative, we have Māori ward representatives, we have metro representatives. So there's a number, and then there's four elected at large. So you've got another elected body that can feed in, and then there's the young people. It was just incredible. You know, we've got one young boy who's a young man who is the deputy mayor for the Nelson area, the youngest elected member.
Is he deputy mayor to Nick Smith?
I think so. I'll have to have a look.
It's an interesting combo, because Nick Smith
was for Tasman.
Yeah.
And was amazing. He's a commissioner. He's actually an RMA commissioner, another young woman who's a commissioner as well, and all over the RMA. Two of them from the South Island, just absolutely phenomenal. And then you look at Mokua Tapania up in the far north district council, who's the mayor. And I noticed yesterday on his post they had their last council meeting, and they have a public forum
at their council, at their full council meeting.
Yeah, they have a public forum, so that's really interesting. So I only just read that this morning.
Do other community? Well, we have a public forum for our community board here. Do other community boards do that?
Yeah, it's part of the community boards.
They do. Okay. Yeah.
And so I thought that's really interesting. So I'm going to look into that more, because of course that would have to be managed really well.
You've got potentially more people,
which is great, because they're engaging in council business.
Which is as it should be.
Yes. Yeah, so,
and it's interesting that, like, the young people really do care about all the issues. There's the connecting them into politics, which is a little bit of the politics can be a bit of a turn off, or just a confusion, really.
And that's like where we have the opportunity.
Unknown country.
Yeah. If you look at the Māori Party, they've got heaps of rangatahi that are involved in their party. Mm. I was watching online their conference earlier on in the year. It was amazing. And they were workshopping with young people, you know, who were getting really involved in the issues of the day. And that's how you feed those minds. And it feeds old brains.
That's a good
up
sign.
Mine.
That's a good sign, the young people getting involved again.
Yeah, I think so too. Anyway, there we go.
Yeah, we've nearly talked for an hour. Poor old Marky's going to have to write this up. So
sorry, Marky.
Yeah, we're sorry. She's very busy at the moment. Hey, yeah. So yes, thank you, Lisa, for coming in.
Thank you,
and we'll talk to you again in the new year.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
I'm going to have a bit of a break.
Yeah, have a great break, and Merry Christmas, everyone, and Happy New Year and all of that. Enjoy time with whānau and friends, and look out for each other. And, yeah, just remember those people that are working in our hospitality and accommodation.
They're going to be busy.
And they're going to be busy, and they're going to be under the pump. So a smile goes a long way.
Yeah. Thanks for coming in, Lisa.
Thank you.